The following episode of Cave Voice was recorded at 1:18 a.m., May 24th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Cave Voice of Resistance!
Hi, thanks for listening to Cave Voice of Resistance.
Resist!
I'm your host, Kelly.
America has rarely seen such success. A respected Supreme Court justice confirmed. Companies investing in American jobs again. America becoming more energy independent. Regulations that kill American jobs eliminated. The biggest tax cut plan in history. You wouldn't know it from watching the news. America is winning, and President Trump is making America great again.
I'm Donald Trump.
It's going to be only America first. America first. America first.
Welcome to Trump's America. The America we find ourselves in is quickly being shaped by a petty, ignorant, racist madman and his cabal of flying monkeys. He is bolstered and protected by a Republican Party who has worked tirelessly for decades to undermine truth, to foster racism, and suppress minorities with an enduring drive to preserve the ruling class while squeezing the rights and wealth from the middle class and the poor in order to maintain an economic structure that has so perversely tipped the scales in regards to the way wealth is distributed in this country as to have made laughable the notion of the American dream. In the wake of the 2016 bloodbath, journalists, scholars, and political strategists fell all over themselves to argue that economic anxiety drove Americans to Trump.
No question that one of the key issues in this election year has been the frustration of workers over wages, debt, and a sense of economic stagnation in too many households.
But new analysis of post-election survey data conducted by the Public Religion Research Institute and The Atlantic found something different.
There are studies showing a significant portion of what Trump's backers have what the Washington Post is calling racial anxiety.
Two new studies, one from Hamilton College and the other from the Pew Research Center, show racial resentment is the biggest driver of Donald Trump's campaign support. Negative opinions of what they call newcomers, African Americans, Latinos, Asians, and Islam. Those are the biggest predictors of support for Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is making white nationalism popular.
He's making nationalism popular. You would call him an American
now. Evidence suggests financially troubled voters in the white working class were more likely to prefer Clinton over Donald. Besides party affiliation, it was cultural anxiety, feeling like a stranger in America, that did the trick.
Racism.
Supporting the deportation of immigrants, and hesitating about educational investment. But here's the thing. The main driver, the number one driver for Trump supporters, was anxiety about cultural change.
Racism!
Kind of. 68% of white working class voters said the American way of life needs to be protected from foreign influence. And nearly half agreed with the statement, quote, "Things have changed so much that I often feel like a stranger in my own country," unquote. Together, these variables were strong indicators of support for Trump. 79% of white working class voters who had these anxieties chose Trump, while only 43% of white working class voters who did not share one or both of these fears cast their vote in the same way. Now, it's popular, maybe even comforting, to see Trump as this anomaly in conservative politics. But is he, though? You have all of these never-Trump conservatives who are clamoring to say, "Not my party.
He's not my kind of Republican.
Those aren't our ideas.
We are the party of Lincoln, and this is not the GOP.
Are they right? Or is Trump just the logical next leader for the GOP? The GOP's devotion to white Christian men
only
and their rebellion against the truth is as much a part of their party as red, white, and blue are, all the way back to the Irish philosopher and statesman Edmund Burke, 1729 to 1797. See, Burke was a proponent of underpinning virtues with manners in society and the importance of religion in moral life, and was famed for staunchly opposing the French Revolutionary War. Edmund Burke is also considered the father of modern conservatism. To be clear, the French Revolution was a watershed event in modern European history. It began in 1789 and ended in the late 1790s, and it was caused by widespread discontent with the French monarchy and the poor economic policies of King Louis XVI, who met his death by guillotine, as did his famous wife,
Marie Antoinette. And while the war didn't achieve all of its goals, and at times degenerated into a chaotic bloodbath, the French Revolution played a critical role in shaping modern nations by showing the world the power inherent in the will of the people. And the philosopher, Edmund Burke, who's lauded as the father of modern conservatives, disagreed with it. So check it out. Corey Robbins is a professor of political science, and he wrote a book called The Reactionary Mind about conservatism. Corey Robbins makes the point that from the very beginning, conservatism hasn't been about limited government, individual liberty, freedom, or restraint, nor has it been about prudential approaches to risk. It's been about fundamental opposition to movements that seek to restructure who has power in society, particularly from the bottom up.
He doesn't want poor people to get a shot at it.
Keep the rich white man in control, and all will be well.
Yeah.
Back before Nixon's Southern strategy, we had another Southern strategy, and that was from the party's standard bearer, Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater. So, of course, the Southern strategy is where Republican leaders consciously appealed to white Southerners' racial grievances in order to gain their support. Goldwater lost his challenge to Lyndon B. Johnson in 1964. Spectacularly, I might add. He lost by the largest popular vote margin in history. But the making of the modern-day Republican Party was in place. It did not stop the GOP from ultimately adopting Goldwater's focus on smaller government, strong national security, and states' rights. But more importantly, they adopted Goldwater's opposition to the landmark 1964 Civil Rights Act, signaling that the Republican Party would be home for white voters, especially Southern Democrats. Unnerved by the burgeoning civil rights movement, which was upsetting all the conservative snowflakes and dismantling Jim Crow laws, effectively threatening the preset hierarchy. In 1968, the GOP managed to elect the upstanding president, Richard M. Nixon, by a narrow margin. And amid the civil rights protests, riots, and unrest to the 60s, Richard M. Nixon found his groove, using the politics of fear to sow support from the white conservatives who felt so afraid that their non-white suburbia might be invaded by brown or black neighbors. Oh my!
In America, we see cities enveloped in smoke and flame. We hear sirens in the night. We see Americans hating each other, fighting each other, killing each other at home. Millions of Americans cry out in anger.
And he was popular. Things were nuts until the GOP would see its fortunes crippled, until the little Watergate scandal forced Nixon to resign in 1974. According to Pew Research Center, it was about that time that the party had the worst showing in 70 years. GOP supporters felt sad, and only 21% of voters identified as Republican. In steps a saint, whose surprise primary challenge to Republican President Gerald Ford in 1976 laid the groundwork for a staunchly conservative coalition built on small government, a free market, all couched in strict, white, Christian, religious values.
For General Electric, here is Ronald Reagan.
Good evening. Tonight, John Forsythe stars on the General Electric Theater.
Reagan wouldn't end up winning the presidency till he ousted Jimmy Carter in 1980. He did grow his coalition out of many things, but driving it all, he built it on the anxieties over the feminist movement, which had gained momentum. And along with the civil rights movement of a decade earlier, political attention was increasingly focused on minorities and women. Reagan's landmark 1986 tax reform plan gave the wealthy an unbelievably huge tax break, reducing the tax rate from 70% to 28% for the highest income earners. A move which would essentially lock the existing rich in as rich and nearly bar all lower income brackets from attaining such a status, preserving the existing power structure. And let's not forget the rank lies and hypocrisy that has remained the same throughout the decades. Reagan, who advocated for fiscal responsibility, trimming, quote, extravagance and fat in government, unquote, as he put it in his 1980 debate with Jimmy Carter, and then swiftly slashed taxes while embarking on a program of massive military spending that left the country in what was at the time historically high debt. He saw no shame in pairing the phrase, quote, get government back within its means, unquote, with the phrase, quote, lighten up our punitive tax burden, unquote. Dick Cheney would later remark that, quote, Reagan proved deficits don't matter, unquote. And of course they don't when you're the GOP, because then, after exploding the deficit,
with unnecessary spending and tax cuts, Republicans can inevitably use that as a means to justify cutting or neglecting vital public services, particularly when Democrats are in power.
The game ain't new, folks.
And we're saying it again now. This is not to say that the GOP has not been moving further to the right. Reagan did grant legal status to nearly 3 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States, something that would get him impeached today. And Nixon started the EPA.
Imagine that.
Reagan's popularity helped propel his vice president, George H.W. Bush, into the presidency in 1988, seeking re-election 4 years later. Problem was, Bush bore the blame for a sputtering economy, which was struggling due to the policies of the Reagan years, and the country had since fallen into recession in 1990. Unemployment reached 7.5% in 1992, its highest level in 10 years. We can continue plodding through history, but it'll all be more the same. Fear-mongering, dog-whistling, bolstering the bank accounts of the rich while stripping that of the poor and the middle class, while scapegoating people of color for every last thing in a desperate, gasping attempt to hold on to the way things were in a rapidly changing world. And under all of it is the necessary objection to the truth or to reality as the way things are, as they constantly need to tell the story of the reality they want to see, or the reality they want us to see, in order to create the reality they wish to see, despite the facts or the science, regardless of the truth or not. At the base of the Republican Party, what defines them is fundamental opposition to movements that seek to restructure who has power in society, particularly from the bottom up. And as Chris Hayes says of MSNBC,
they won. They won all the supply side fights. They privatized everything they could be privatized. They deregulated everything they could deregulate. And now here we are, and it's like, what is your project? The only project they have left is to cut corporate taxes. There's nothing left for them to do. They have picked every cherry off the tree, and it stands there bare.
And it stands bare. Speaking of Republican policies, Harley Davidson took its tax cut, closed the factory, and rewarded shareholders. And are we surprised? Anyone who has looked into the entire history of America should not be. The motorcycle maker told Kansas City workers that it would close a plant there. Days later, it announced a nearly $7 million stock buyback plan. In September 2017, House Majority Quitter Paul Ryan traveled to a Harley-Davidson plant in Wisconsin to tour the Republican tax scam, which Donald would end up signing later the year.
Tax reform can stop punishing companies for making things in America and selling them overseas. Tax reform can put American manufacturers and American companies like Harley-Davidson on a much better footing to compete in the global economy and keep jobs here in America. That is why we are so focused on getting tax reform done.
4 short months later, in Kansas City, Missouri, 800 workers at a Harley-Davidson factory were told they would be losing their jobs when the plant closed its doors and shifted operations to a facility in York, Pennsylvania. A net loss of 350 jobs. Corporate stock buybacks hit a record high of $178 billion in the first 3 months of 2018. Meanwhile, average hourly earnings for American workers are up a whole 67 cents over the past year. And workers are supposed to fall to their knees in base gratitude and worship. But that's the thing, though, isn't it? We are supposed to grovel and kiss their rings, aren't we? And it's not just the Republicans. Here we are. Both large and small banks are enjoying record profits this year. Yet both Democrats and Republicans chose to send us barreling towards yet another economic crash.
Doing good, guys.
By a vote of 258 to 159, the House passed something called the Economic Growth Regulatory Relief and Consumer Protection Act, which very likely will neither grow the economy nor protect consumers, which will offer most of America's biggest financial institutions relief from the regulations put in place so that those institutions would have a harder time turning the world's economy to ash. The law now frees banks with up to $250 billion in assets from the stress test required by the now crippled Dodd-Frank reforms passed in the wake of the last crisis. Among other Goliaths, this new law would exempt giant foreign financial institutions from U.S. regulations as long as they kept less than $250 billion in assets in this country. The bill also exempts some 85% of the banks from Dodd-Frank's rules against discriminatory lending practices, because we've never had trouble with those before.
Say what?
And a day after the Supreme Court made it impossible for individuals cheated by their employers to join class action lawsuits.
Oh yeah, that happened too.
This bill contains provisions that would establish similar prohibitions on consumers cheated by financial institutions and credit reporting agencies.
That's not helping.
The least Congress could do is pretend they're on our side. So yeah, our conservative Supreme Court just screwed over the people in favor of big business. But who is surprised? The U.S. Supreme Court handed employers a significant legal victory on Monday, striking a blow to labor rights groups. The court ruled that employers can legally require workers to sign away their rights to pursue class action claims. The court rejected the National Labor Relations Board argument that class action waivers violate federal labor law. The ruling supports employers' right to include arbitration clauses in employment contracts that prohibit workers from acting collectively to take legal action over workplace issues. So by all means, have at it, employers. We have no recourse. And the Senate.
Looking pretty swampy.
We got ourselves a brand new commissioner of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Meet Dana Bioko, who made her name helping companies avoid responsibility for their harmful products. This is getting old. The Intercept reports that as partner at law firm Jones Day, Bioko represented Big Tobacco and fought in court against asbestos workers who developed mesothelioma. Not to mention her efforts to rid Yamaha of those pesky little lawsuits after their off-road vehicles either crippled or killed children.
Boo! You suck!
There was also a confirmation vote on the nomination of Brian Montgomery to be an Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Confirmed, 74-23. So the FHA, a unit of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, is one of the country's biggest sources of funding for home loans. Now that home prices have bounced back, FHA is in the black, but threatened with underfunding and outdated technology. Only hours after being sworn in as president, Donald blocked an Obama-era plan to lower the insurance premiums FHA collects from homeowners.
You're not helping!
And now this guy, Montgomery, has said that excessive enforcement on mortgage lenders have prevented many Americans from becoming homeowners and building household wealth. Meanwhile, between 2009 and 2015, mortgage lenders paid billions of dollars to settle claims that they defrauded the government program, which insures lenders and mortgage investors against defaults on loans they make to homeowners. So yay, more gifts from the Trump administration. By the end of the week, Jelena McWilliams will be officially confirmed as chairperson for the board of directors for the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation for a term of 5 years. She will be the final bank regulator, who will likely be more than happy to speed up the deregulation of banks. Lovers of poverty rejoice! Listen, CNN Money had a piece called Millennials Born in 1980s May Never Recover from the Great Recession. And now, we're likely heading towards another one. So the network of a typical family headed by someone born in the 1980s was 34% below what was expected, according to a new Financial Reserve Bank of St. Louis study, titled A Lost Generation. What's worse, the typical 1980s family lost ground between 2010 and 2016 after the recession ended. So, if you were in your late 20s and early to mid-30s in 2016, you're likely the only age group to lose ground out of the 6 cohorts studied. The reports, which was based on the Federal Reserve's 2016 survey of consumer finances, said, quote, "This represents a missed opportunity because asset appreciation is unlikely to be as rapid in the near future as it was during the recent period," unquote. Those born in the 1980s were not the only group to fare worse than expected. Americans born in 1960s and 1970s accumulated 11% and 18% wealth, respectively, in 2016 than predicted. This is worrying, but these cohorts, who were now generally in their 40s and 50s, had narrowed the gaps considerably since 2010. Meanwhile, older generations had so much more worth than expected, with those born in the 1930s doing at least 17% above the predicted value. The problem is homeownership. The 1980s kids,
were generally too young to own homes prior to the Great Recession. Even by 2016, fewer than 45% had bought homes, below what was expected. But here's the thing, 80s kids are still heavily in debt, which increases their financial fragility. Even worse, the main types of debt they owe are student loans, auto loans, and credit card debt. Unlike mortgages, these do not finance an appreciating asset, such as real estate, which is one of the reasons these families failed to boost their wealth in the last few years. This could have long-lasting consequences. Okay, let's shift gears and talk about our hateful, holier-than-thou educational secretary, Betsy DeVos, Voldemort's mistress. She said on Tuesday that it is up to individual schools to decide whether to call U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement if they suspect their students are undocumented.
Sir, I think that's a school decision. It's a local community decision. And again, I refer to the fact that we have laws and we also are compassionate.
Oh, sure they could. Schools could turn in undocumented children to ICE, except for one thing. It's against the Constitution. The Supreme Court said so in 1982 in a ruling called Plyer v. Doe that guaranteed the rights of students to receive a public education regardless of their immigration status. So na-na-na-na-boo-boo, go back to church and sit in some doo-doo. From 1994 to 2017, the number of immigrants detained, sometimes measured by number of beds, has jumped by 500%, from less than 7,000 to more than 40,000, according to ABC News. And this is a boom for the private prison industry at a great expense to us. And the more immigrants these for-profit companies detain, the more money they make. Meanwhile, these prisons are free to abuse and neglect at will. See, a private jail typically charges the government a daily rate per detained immigrant. And in order to cut costs and maximize profits, human rights groups say that these contractors routinely neglect detainees' medical care. More than 170 inmates have died while in immigration custody over the past 15 years, according to Capital in Maine, which is an award-winning online publication that reports from California on the most pressing economic, environmental, and social issues of our time. Capital in Maine has a new project. The site reads, quote, "Deadly detention is intended to give names and faces to undocumented immigrants who have died in federal detention and to explain how they met such sad fates in the country most had come in search of for better lives. It is a counterweight to ICE's secrecy and comes as the Trump administration expands an already sprawling detention system to accommodate the growing number of immigrants caught up in its deportation surge." The map below shows the 179 deaths in ICE custody from October 1st, 2003 to February 19th, 2018, unquote. And below they have an interactive map, plus details of each death and information about the facility. Earlier this week, Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat of California, introduced a bill to halt the expansion of immigrant jails, improve oversight of these facilities, and use alternatives to detention, such as ankle monitors. But let's be honest, this is about as much of a chance of passing as old Congress members will get a pay cut bill. Because Republicans. So the NFL, with its ruling class of white owners, have bent the knee to the Mad King and ruled that their majority black players are not allowed to have a voice and are forced to stand in respect of a flag that does not respect them. Team owners decided that starting this season, players can stay in the locker room during the anthem. If players take a knee to protest black and brown people being unjustly shot down by law enforcement, Commissioner Roger Goodell can potentially fine both teams and players. And the only thing the team owners succeeded in here is ensuring that this controversy will last even longer and get even uglier by trying to sweep protesters out of sight and into the locker rooms. But it's not all bad news.
Yay!
Women candidates have a chance to make history in several red states after Tuesday's primaries. Several women have a chance to make history following primary elections in Georgia, Texas, and Kentucky. Stacey Abrams became the first black woman to win a major party's nomination for governor in Georgia, while Lupe Valdez became the first openly gay person and Hispanic woman to do the same in Texas. This year's elections also may lead to more women in Congress, as a record number of women run for office. the first black woman governor in the United States, the first lesbian serving in Congress from Texas, and the first Democratic woman representing Kentucky in the House. All of these scenarios moved closer to reality following a round of primary elections in red states.
Yay!
So, remember how Iowa Republicans rammed through an extreme anti-abortion bill in the dead of night? One, that GOP Governor Kim Reynolds herself admitted was a waste of money even as she signed it. Well, now Iowa Democratic Attorney General Tom Miller has said that he will not defend the restrictive law in court. A letter from Miller's office said Miller, quote, could not zealously assert the state's position because of his core belief in the statute. This core belief that the statute, if upheld, would undermine rights and protections for women, unquote. This is all over that stupid heartbeat bill, which would ban abortion as soon as the fetal heartbeat could be detected, which can sometimes happen before a person even knows they're pregnant. It serves for no other reason than to put lives at risk, as pregnant people will still seek out dangerous alternatives to safe and legal abortion. Miller's refusal to defend this draconian law is a step in the right direction in the never-ending fight for reproductive freedom.
Yay!
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has directed the New York Police Department to change the way it handles marijuana-related offenses. He tweeted, quote, "The NYPD will overhaul its marijuana enforcement policies in the next 30 days. We must end unnecessary arrest and disparity in enforcement," unquote. And that disparity is dark. In an investigation this month by the New York Times, they found that, quote, black people were arrested on low-level marijuana charges at 8 times the rate of white people over the last 3 years, and that among neighborhoods where people called to complain about marijuana at the same rate, police almost always made arrests at a significantly higher rate in the area with more black residents. Unquote. De Blasio's directive is a crucial step forward for racial justice and is keeping with the movement across the nation.
Yay!
So the White House is seeking to change funding requirements under Title X to provide money only to clinics that focus on, quote, natural family planning methods and abstinence-only education, unquote.
Please.
And California Attorney General Xavier Becerra is leading a coalition of 19 states seeking to block the Trump administration from cutting funding for family planning clinics like Planned Parenthood. Becerra called that out for exactly what it is, an attack on constitutionally protective reproductive freedom. He said in a statement, quote, "All women, regardless of their zip code and economic background, deserve access to basic health services. Yet once again, the Trump-Pence administration is taking our country backwards by making it harder for women to access healthcare." Unquote. His coalition filed an amicus brief supporting a lawsuit previously filed by Planned Parenthood asking for a preliminary injunction against the changes.
Yay!
And finally, the Louisiana Senate passed a measure that would restore voting rights to people on probation or parole after a felony conviction. So the bill implements a 5-year waiting period before someone can vote again, but currently, those on probation and parole in the state are never allowed to vote again, even once their full sentences have been served. Over 69,000 people have been disenfranchised as a result. The Louisiana House has already approved the bill and will only need to reconcile the Senate with an amendment. The bill will then be sent to Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards, who is expected to sign it. Chico Yancey, an organizer with Voice of the Experienced, which lobbied for the bill, said, quote, "So much of the criminal justice system exists to deprive us of our humanity. This bill restores a little of that humanity," unquote. Thank you for sticking with me in this episode, K, Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice or on Facebook, where you'll find all of the stories I've discussed in this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with hosts Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.